scores! Gilmore scores! The ball three left!
Off the glass, it left corner to Aguila. Aguila to the left circle. Passing to Yell, a shot. Save made by Yell. Aguila's rebound. Another shot. They score! The Flames win it! Yeah, baby!
They score!
And the sea of red erupts!
Flames Talk starts now on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Here's Pat Steinberg and Aaron Vickers.
Okay, happy Friday. Welcome, welcome, welcome. It is a Friday, November 8th, and we are underway this hour on Flames Talk with Aaron Vickers of NHL.com. My name is Pat Steinberg. Welcome to the Sports Drive, brought to you by Calgary Lock and Safe. Treat yourself with up to $500 in savings of fire-resistant gun safes. Explore the full line of safes at CalgaryLockandSafe.com. Hello, Vix.
You know, I had realized, but I also hadn't realized at the same time, which makes zero sense, that it was Friday today, so thank you for enlightening me.
It is indeed Friday, and hopefully you're having a wonderful Friday if you're listening with us live, and we're available on Apple, Spotify, Amazon, Seeker, wherever you get your podcasts, and it's good to have you on board this hour. We got Derek Wills a little bit later on your Daily Flames Roundtable, but, you know, when something just keeps on happening, maybe you can say that it is part of a team's identity. When you continue to see the same thing happening over and over and over again, and through Calgary's first 14 games of the season, I think it's probably fair to say, that this is a third-period team, or they have been a third-period team. The numbers are off the charts in terms of what they've done in the third period. They've scored 40 goals in their 14 games. 21 of them have come in the third. That is 52.5% of all their goals scored have come in that third period. And that's something to just keep on showing. Thursday night in Boston, down 3-1 after 40. Boom. There's a Yegor Sharangovich power play goal. Boom. There's a Nazem Kadri game tying goal. And that's two more third period goals. And they just, don't tend to go away in third periods. That is definitely one thing that has become a little bit of a part of their identity, hasn't it?
It has, and you got to tip the cap to them for their gumption, if you will, their stick-to-itiveness, their whatever made-up adjective and word that you want to use. The Calgary Flames have managed so far this season to find a way to stay in games, to, when they've fallen behind, battle back, put themselves in a position to either grab a point or grab 2 points and just generally make life miserable on the opposition so far in the third stanza of this season. It's probably a recipe or a formula you don't want to have to always rely on, but if you have the ability to dip into your bag of tricks and pull out a goal or two in the third period, you'll certainly take it.
This was Ryan Huska, head coach, on Thursday night, and he talked about just that. Another night where they were down, another night where they don't wave the white flag, and another night where they're able to come back and pick up, at least in this circumstance, pick up the 1 point.
I thought it was a good game. It was a hard game. And I liked how our guys, how we stuck with it again. I mean, that's kind of a trademark for our team, is that we always feel like we're still in games. So I'm pleased with how they were a resilient bunch tonight. And that's a big point for us.
So they've scored the fourth most third period goals in the league at 21. They have the fourth best third period goal differential in the league at +6. It's just something they do, and I think that that's fair to say that this is a group that doesn't wave the white flag. This is a group that doesn't decide to pack it in when they're down, and I also think what you said is also true, that you probably don't want to make it too much of a habit. I've got some numbers for you that I'll throw at you in just a second, but you probably don't want to make it too much of a habit falling down as much as the Flames have, but I do think that there are some definite positives for a team that continues to fight back and a team that continues to prove they're never fully out of a hockey game, because that's something that can come back and be a benefit for you. That's something that can come back and be positive for you as a long season goes along. By the way, text line open, 960-960. Would love to hear from you this hour on Flames Talk. Your thoughts on what we've seen through the first 14 games for the Flames, and that one particular element that this group just has decided they don't go away in hockey games. 4-1, 3-1, doesn't seem to be mad. Seem to matter what the score is after 20 or after 40 minutes of play. They do find ways to keep themselves in hockey games.
Well, and it's interesting because you're putting a lot of young players, it doesn't matter if you're young or an old player, but you're being put into situations where games are on the line in the third period, and you're not in an advantageous situation. And I think that helps spur on development a little bit, and it helps bring a bit of a cohesiveness or an attitude or a swagger where everybody on the Calgary Flames, whether you're a first-line right winger or a fourth-line center, there's a belief that no matter what the situation is after 40 minutes, you're still in a game and you still have the opportunity to win a game or take some points away, as we saw against the Boston Bruins on Thursday night. Now, is it ideal? No. If you look at winning percentage for teams that are leading after 40 minutes versus teams that are trailing after 40 minutes, there's some dramatic swings on that front. But hey, if you're finding ways to win in the NHL when you're trailing after 40 minutes, that brings a confidence, that brings an attitude that you're never out of it, and that's something you want sort of permeating through your locker room.
See, I'd have a whole lot, I'd be a whole lot more encouraged about, you know, the third period numbers if there were a lot of games where they were leading in the third period, if there were a lot of games where they were controlling and then adding on. Like, that was one of the, I remember one of our old texters, he doesn't text in very often anymore, but one of our old texters, Mike, used to really point to this trend during that first full year of Daryl Sutter, the year with you know, where they won the West and they were the best team in the division, so on and so forth. That year, they ran the score up. And third periods, you know, a 2-1 game turned into a 5-1 game. And they took games that were in the balance and that they were leading by a slim margin, and they turned it into a no-doubt margin. And so you'd be a whole lot more encouraged about a +6 goal differential in the third period if there were a lot of games where they were leading in the third, because this is the maybe the flip side of the argument. So we're being really positive about the way Calgary has been able to come from behind and fight back and make third periods interesting, and this group that never waves the white flag, all that type of stuff. And all of that is true. But on the flip side, it's something you don't want to have to rely on for a good chunk of your season. Well, they got 68 games remaining, and you'd like to be in as few games where you're trailing by multiple goals in the third period as possible as you go forward. Because these numbers are going to paint a picture that if they continue on this way, that our favorite U word, unsustainable, you're going to start running into unsustainable territory with these numbers. So the Flames have played a grand total, as we're talking here on Friday, November 8th, the Flames have played a grand total of 852 minutes and 8 seconds of hockey this season. In that 852.08, they have played 345 minutes and 50 seconds from behind. That is the 10th most time in the NHL trailing in games. So that's kind of not where you want to be. You don't want to have that number near the top, and they're number 10 overall with 40.6% of all of their hockey this year has been played trailing. On the other side, they have held a lead for just 147 minutes and 55 seconds, which is 30th overall. So the third lowest total, which is not where you want to be either.
No.
That accounts for just 17.4% of their season so far. So more than 40% of the season they've been playing from behind, just a little more than 17% of their season they've been playing with the lead. Like, that is not a sustainable trend for a lot of wins. It's something that you would absolutely like to start moving a little bit closer to even. And so that's the flip side of the conversation that we're having. As good as these comebacks are and as good as their ability is to stay in games, you want to lessen the amount of times that happens going forward here.
Well, we talk a lot about the style the Calgary Flames need to play in order to be competitive and in order to win, and we've already discussed that it's a tough style to play over 82 games. It's even tougher when you spend half of that time trailing and trying to play catch-up hockey. It's not, when you're up to versus being down to, it's not the same level of exertion that you're needing to put out there in order to get the results that you want. It's a lot easier on the body, it's a lot easier on the mind when you're always playing with the lead. So it is physically and mentally taxing when you're always having to find a way to come back from a deficit in order to remain competitive or in order to win a game. That is something that over a larger body of work is actually just going to be, again, physically and mentally detrimental to what the Calgary Flames are trying to accomplish night in, night out. So they need to find a way to, one, you still want to keep putting yourself in a position to outscore the opponent in the third period, But it's also imperative that they find a way to do that in the first and the second period as well, because it is so much easier to play with a lead than it is to constantly be chasing and chasing and chasing.
And I mean, they're a minus goal differential in the two other periods, right? So you're plus six in the third period, but minus in both the first and second periods. We've seen them get off to poor starts in first periods, even Thursday. I know that Tyson Berry scored, 19 seconds after Hampus Lindholm made it 1-0? Yeah, it was the very next shift that he scored. But that was a really poor start. First 2 minutes for the Flames, they were on their heels. They were hemmed in, and Boston deservingly took a 1-0 lead. And then Jonas Korpisalo let them right back in. And,
yeah, and
okay, maybe not great. By the way, Flames in the first period are minus seven, and in the second period are minus three, and they're plus six in the third period. So it's not a bad thing that they are good in the third period, but it's not a good thing that they have maybe found themselves in too many spots this year where they felt like they have had to fight behind. And there have been too many instances this year where, you know, a couple quick goals will happen in succession, and next thing you know, the Flames are trailing by a goal or two. So it's an area that there's definitely some development needed, but the one area that you don't want to see fall by the wayside is their ability to stay in games, because that and their ability to believe that they're never out of it, that's a great thing to have. You just want to maybe flex that belief a little bit less than they have this year. That's maybe the moral of the story. Great thing to have, use it a little bit less than you have so far this season.
Well, and when we talk about great third periods and coming from behind and finding a way to win, we'll automatically think back to 14-15. The Findaway Flames, how night in, night out, they seemingly defied the odds to come back and tie up a game and force overtime and win. That season, the Calgary Flames were tied for first in the NHL with 99 third-period goals. They still had 20 losses when trailing after 40 minutes in that season. So as much as we look back to that year and go,
yeah, they were still below 500.
They were still, like it's not a way to remain competitive. And I know that they found a way to make the playoffs and they won a round and all that. But that even still goes to show you can be the best third period team in the NHL and still have a losing record under that scenario. Now, it's not sustainable, as you say.
The best third period team in the NHL right now is the Winnipeg Jets.
Well,
plus 17. They have scored.
That doesn't surprise me at all.
25 third period goals to just 8 again. So the Jets have been the best third period team, followed by the Vegas Golden Knights and the New York Rangers. Then the Flames are number 4 with a plus 6 goal differential in period number 3. I'll read you a few texts at 960. This reads, first of all, from Greg in Varsity, do you think part of the third period success comes from pushing the pace all game and being the fitter and hungrier of the teams come the third? I don't know if they're any more fit or well-conditioned than other teams are, but I definitely think that the fact that they don't let up or part of their MO and what they know they need to do over the course of a game is play the same way, or else they're going to find themselves behind in a lot of games. You know, that mentality, I think the sticking with it is a big part of who they are, because I think that's been drilled into them, and I think that's been kind of central to their overall their overall mindset right from the get-go of this season, because they know they don't have the high-end talent advantage against a lot of teams in this league. They have to rely on depth. They have to rely on four lines and three pairings, kind of pulling all in the same direction. It all sounds very cliche, but that's the way the Flames win hockey games. They don't win games when one guy takes over very often.
No, and it's cliche for a reason, because it's true, and it's in the DNA of the style that the Flames play. It's what's ingrained into them from the coaching staff. Is if you want to have wins, you want to have success, you want to keep good vibes going, or you want to start creating and generating some momentum, it has to be more of a 60-minute effort, where by the time that third period puck drop happens to, you know, the opening faceoff, you need to make sure that you've still got the pedal down, because that's when you might be able to take an opportunity to capitalize on maybe an opponent that's sleeping. I don't necessarily buy the Flames are fitter.
No, I don't.
Especially when we're talking about
either.
A dozen games into the season, like we're 1 month in. If we're talking about March and April and May, or we're in even in the dog days of February, where the Calgary Flames look like they've still managed to maintain a bit of momentum and a bit of an advantage by playing up against teams that you're basically playing a style that wears them down and wears them down, and it's a lot tougher in game 50 to 70 to continue that style. But when we're talking about 14 games in, we're talking about 1 month in, I wouldn't put a lot of credence into it.
This says, love the never-quit identity the Flames have. Lots of positives on this retooling Flames team. However, I would like to see more leads for the Flames in games. Ian in Cranbrook says, guys, these guys are going to be chasing it until they get a true tested center, not someone who can play center, but win draws. It all starts there. Therefore, slow starts and chasing it in the third period. You know, I believe it was Scott who called in on Flames Talk postgame on Thursday night following the overtime loss in Boston and was asking, like, why is this always the MO of the Flames recently? Like, why are we always talking about them being a team that has to fight back and come from behind? Because we saw a lot of that last year. That was something that we talked about for a good chunk of last season. You know, we obviously have the 2014-15 reference that you brought up. I mean, there have been a number of teams over the last decade or so where that has kind of been part of it. And my answer to Scott was, I don't know exactly why, but my best hypothesis is that, you know, in a lot of those years, they haven't been what you would call high-end teams. And when you're a roster that maybe isn't as stacked as some other teams are in this league, yeah, you're probably going to be playing from behind a whole lot. So you might have to find your way to win games. You might have to, you know, find yourself down in third periods and putting together crazy comebacks if you want to win games. Because, you know, if your roster doesn't stack up the same way as other teams do and you've got a talent deficit on some nights or a lot of nights, yeah, you are going to find yourself trailing more often than not.
Yeah, for me, I would put it just simply as some nights you've got to find a way to outwill your opponent, because there's frequently games where you're up against better competition that can outskill you. So it's a matter of will versus skill. And over a 60-minute game, you can put a lot of pressure on your opponent with the effort and the work ethic that you have versus them being able to rely a little bit more on skill.
This says, the issue, Pat, is that they have a deficit of talent, exactly what we're just talking about. They're doing the best they can with what they have, and the only teams that can get a lead, they can get a lead on, are teams like Chicago and Philly. With all other teams, they can only keep it close with the talent they have, with the blue line they have. Would you prefer if they had five games that looked like the Vegas or Utah game? We're not complaining about it, whoever this grumpy texter is. We're just saying that this is...
It's good to be self-aware.
It's also been actually quite entertaining to watch. Like, they've made games interesting, and through 14 games, I come away very few games have been like, oh, that was a stinker to watch. I mean, the Montreal game was a lot of fun. The Boston game was a lot of fun. That overtime was out of bounds fun, but the 60 minutes that came before the 4 minutes and 40 seconds we got in 3-on-3 overtime were a lot of fun too. So by this being part of what they've been through the first 14 games, it's made for a pretty entertaining brand of hockey too.
Well, and look to Thursday when the Bruins score back-to-back goals 31 seconds apart, and then Elias Lindholm has an opportunity, and credit to Wolf for making that stop and kind of turning the momentum a little bit. But Boston scores two goals in 31 seconds, and I go, oh, this is going to get away from them. And then I look at him, oh, wait, we're only halfway through the second period. We still have half a game to go here. Let's maybe pump the brakes on this getting away from them. And lo and behold, the third period, as we've talked about, hits, and away they go.
Theo writes, let's also remember it's easier to score when you're down two or three than when you're tied up, similar to a football team up 20 playing prevent defense. No doubt about it. A lot of times when you, especially three goals is usually the tipping point
worst lead in
any given hockey game. Well, it's, you know, the reason why I think we hear that a lot is because when one goal tie games are still played the exact same way. Teams don't make any kind of in-game adjustments when they're within a goal, even within two goals, until it gets late. You know, it's still very much stay in your structure. But when that lead gets to three, that's when opposing coaches, as they're the trailing team, will say, okay, we can start taking more risks. We can start activating. You know, you're going every time if you're a blue liner. If you see a little bit of daylight, you're pinching. You know, teams change the way they play. And so when the trailing team changes and their structure gets a little bit looser, then the leading team has to adjust at the same time, which is why a lot of times you'll see teams back on their heels a little bit, because they're reacting to the other team being far more aggressive and getting out of their structure a whole lot more. It's why you see a whole lot more counterpunching in those games, because teams will, You know, they'll protect. It's not an active going in to prevent defense thing. For me, it's always been more of just a reaction to what the trailing team is doing all of a sudden.
Well, and to sort of reemphasize your point with another one, that's the situation too where you see the coach of the leading team. I don't want to say you start rolling four lines because that's not what I'm going to be driving at. It's getting your third and fourth lines out there more so that your first and second lines aren't getting as much ice time so you're not burning them out, particularly if you're looking at a back-to-back situation or a day off and then another game. It's a lot of minute management once you get into that three-goal lead territory.
And on the other side of things, you know, then you'll see bench shortening
right,
on the other side
right.
And the best players are coming out even more frequently. Edward says the leading team will naturally play preventatively and allow the team behind to make that push. And finally, this says, this all leads somewhere. The mentality and mindset leads to success in years to come. These are building blocks. And I do think that is a very, very fair point. Let's say that this 3 to 5 year plan goes according to plan, and you know, we're talking about them kicking off the new building and they're a contending team and all that type of stuff, and a lot of the guys who have been here now are still there then yeah, I do think that these are things that you can look at as building blocks and things that you can help lay foundation with. I just it's all part of building an identity with this group, and I think first and foremost that's the most important thing they're trying to accomplish this year. And certainly from the outside, when we did our mailbag on Tuesday, somebody asked, like, what is the real measure of success this year? And one of the things I said is that they start to kind of get those building blocks in place for what their identity is going to be, not just this season, but what this core group's identity is going to be as they hopefully move to being a higher-end group in the next number of years.
Yeah, and to piggyback off that as well, it's the progression of young players. And when you're seeing a Connor Zeri and a Martin Pospisil and a Matt Coronato start to get comfortable in games where you're down a couple of goals but still know that you've got the guy beside you that's pulling the rope in the same direction to get you back into games and you're finding some success in it, those experiences go into the memory banks for when you become the leaders of the team and you're trying to get everybody else on the same page because you've gone through the experience, you've seen what works, and you can draw on that in the future.
We are underway this hour on Flames Talk. It's Steinberg and Vickers on a Friday from the Scotiabank Saddle Dome. We're hanging out here in the Hot Stove Lounge as we continue to perfect our new little project. Got a little buzz. I put a little teaser on my Instagram.
I saw that.
And got a little bit of buzz on it. So, you know, we're working on things. We're working on getting us into the 21st century here at Sportsnet 960 The Fan. We're slowly working on it. Shan's over there working the switcher and getting this all pretty.
Is that
looking
the technical
on these
term?
Cameras. The digital switcher, yes. The switching
nice.
Program, absolutely. A few other things to touch on. Dustin Wolf, I thought he deserved a whole lot better in Boston. Like, not to say that his team let him down. I thought that he played well enough to get the win. He was really good last night. You know, maybe overcommitted a little bit or found himself sliding a little bit on the 1-0 goal.
Yeah, but
I mean, I'm not
Andre,
a goalie guy.
Andre Kuzmenko, though, you can't let your defenseman walk through back door like
agreed.
That.
Agreed. I'm just saying that
he
probably would say that he overcommitted a little
well,
bit.
Well, he almost ended up in the corner by the time
exactly.
he got his skate back down. So, yeah, I'll agree with you on that one.
But otherwise, I thought he was – and I don't even think that was a bad goal. It was still a grade-A scoring chance. But, I mean, he kept a minute. Didn't keep a minute because it wasn't like Boston dominated or Calgary dominated. But, you know, I thought Boston of the two teams were the slightly more dangerous team. I thought Wolf had to make a number of key saves on high-quality Boston opportunities. He was dynamite in overtime. And, hell, he almost kept the game winner out. Like, he had Brad Marchand.
Which was a rebound chance, too. So it's not like he was beat cleanly on the first
one. Well, no. I mean, Brad Marchand was all by himself and got, like, I thought Brad Marchand was just going to skate away and smash his stick because he'd already hit two posts.
Yep.
And then he gets another point-blank opportunity, and he gets robbed by Wolf, unfortunately, because it was such a quick desperation save from Wolf because he was kind of hung out to dry on that particular play. Marchand was able to get his rebound and win the game 4-3 Bruins win. But I just thought it was another really strong night for Dustin Wolf as he has bounced back with a couple of strong performances after that Utah game.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, it could have went a little bit awry when Boston scores 2 goals in 31 seconds. But the very next shift, he stops Elias Lindholm from point-blank range and keeps Calgary within 2. And again, I don't really fault He did overcommit on the first one. The second one, a Pavel Zacha slap shot from the slot on a rolling puck. Like, your guess is as good as mine as to where that puck was actually going to end up. And then again, very next shift, a backdoor tap, and it's hard to fault him on that one as well. So, again, all in all, 34 saves, a very productive outing for Dustin Wolf, and be curious to see how the Flames handle things moving forward when it comes to their tandem.
Yeah, he's now seventh in the NHL with a .942 save percentage at 5-on-5. That is for all goalies, minimum of 100 minutes played. He's ninth in the NHL over at Money Puck with 3.7 goals saved above expected at 5-on-5, so he continues to be very strong in net for the Flames. By the way, Flames went up slightly in Money Puck's playoff tracking. They're up to 22.7% to make the playoffs at Money Puck. I quite enjoy tracking those things.
Yeah.
I like to see it day by day to see how I think that it is accurate and the Flames actually have a firm 22.7% chance of making the playoffs this year. No, I do not, but I do think it's interesting because the way they put their projections together has always been really interesting to me. So
hold down the first wild card spot right now.
I like tracking that on a daily basis based on results and see where they go up, down, that type of thing.
You're a little bit more ambitious than I am, but I curiously take a peek at it every once in a while.
You're still not playoffs don't really register for you, hey?
We're not even to the American Thanksgiving, which is, again, and even that stat or that sort of quasi faux deadline isn't an exact science, but that's when I'll start paying attention. And then, you know, every couple of weeks I'll take a peek, but for me, I'm not a daily connoisseur like yourself.
By the way, Colin writes in, says, Colin B. says, Pat, Wolf also slid a little far on the winning goal, which had him a bit out of position for the rebound, but yes, he's been fine. And I don't fault him a single iota. I mean, Raz got beat clean behind the net. Kadri and Backlund were nowhere to be found. And I'm not even criticizing. It's more just, you know, Lindholm beat Rasmus clean behind the net, and neither Backlund nor Kadri were expecting that battle to be lost. So they were flying the zone, and it left Wolf one-on-one. So Wolf making the first stop, whether he slid too much or not, that's just an outstanding stop on the Marchand shot. And unfortunately, the rebound got kicked right back to Marchand. But I don't put that a single iota on Dustin Wolf. The fact that he made the initial stop was a borderline miracle in and of itself.
Well, you mentioned the two forwards not expecting it. I'm not going to pretend to know what it's like when you're a goalie and your defenseman goes behind the net on 3-on-3 on a faceoff win, but I can't imagine Dustin Wolf himself was expecting to face a point-blank shot from Brad Marchand seconds after he sees Rasmus Anderson go behind the net too. So you always have to be ready as a goalie, but there's still going to be elements of surprise, and your job is to stop the first one, and then if you have to follow up with a second save, you try and for it, but in theory, you would appreciate as a teammate to be there in order to inhibit a second chance opportunity.
And still no update on Anthony Mantha. We wait to see if there is going to be a timeline that is announced on Anthony and his lower body injury. All we know is that he's on IR, which means he's not eligible to return until Tuesday. It does feel a little ominous that there's been no real update on it, and all we're hearing is under evaluation. So we'll wait and see where that plays out, but Dryden Hunt is with the team in Buffalo, and the Flames will take on the Sabres on Saturday morning for an 11 o'clock face-off right here on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. It's Steinberg and Vickers along with you. This hour on Flames Talk underway, and McDonald's Canada is celebrating the return of hockey season with Fan Day deals every Tuesday, Thursday, and Sunday. Tune into Flames Talk Monday for your chance to win a $100 McDonald's gift card that you can use to score a Big Mac, McChicken, or Filet-O-Fish Fan Day deal for just $4 plus tax every Tuesday, Thursday, and Sunday only through the McDonald's app. Download the McDonald's app to score great deals and earn My McDonald's rewards towards free McDonald's.
Talking your team right now. Flames Talk is on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Little Friday edition of the Daily Flames Roundtable now brought to you by Mercedes-Benz Country Hills. The simpler way to sell your vehicle is with their expertise. Visit Mercedes-Benz Country Hills just minutes from the airport. It's Steinberg, Aaron Vickers of NHL.com. And now let's say hello to the voice of the Flames, Derek Wills, who joins us now to complete our Daily Flames Roundtable. And the never-ending search, to find the ideal line combination expectations for the Calgary Flames continues, and that continued on Friday morning in Buffalo with Martin Pospisil back at center, Yegor Sharangovich back on the wing, so a little bit of a swap there, and another set of lines that we're looking at right now. Guys, We started the season with Martin Pospisil playing down the middle, and then he was moved to the wing. Now he's back down the middle. We've seen Sharangovich play both as well. How much of a rotating door do we think that third period is going to be, that third center spot, rather, is going to be as we continue through the season? Like, how much of a work in progress is this going to be for the Flames this year?
Well, based on what we've seen in the first 14 games, it's probably going to continue to be a revolving door until someone grabs that spot and proves that they belong there. And to this point in the season, Martin Pospisil certainly hasn't done that. And you know, more difficult circumstances, I would say, for Yegor Sharangovich because he gets injured in the final preseason game, misses the first seven regular season games. So, you know, he's a player who's just trying to get up to speed right now. But, you know, Pospisil, who I thought looked pretty good in that spot in the first three games of the season when he had 5 points, has not looked good in any spot since then. I mean, he's pointless in 11 games. He's goalless in 13 games since he scored in the season opener versus the Canucks. And guys, he doesn't look like the same player this season that he did last season when he was creating chaos in games against the 31 other NHL teams. As for Yegor Sharangovich, good to see him score again last night, but he's only got a couple of goals. So the Flames are looking for more offense from their top nine right now. And when I asked Ryan Huska about the changes during practice today, he wouldn't commit to the being the lines that we're going to see against the Sabres on Saturday. But I'd be shocked if the Flames didn't start Saturday afternoon's game that way. He said he's just trying to find some offense. And I think trying to get some guys going. And for me, Pospisil and Sharangovich would probably be, if not at the top, then near the top of that list.
Yeah, I think we're going to sort of see some sort of open door rotation until one of Sharangovich, Pospisil, or even at some point, whether we actually get to this or not, Connor Zary getting a look down the middle as well. And this is, of course, pending any sort of transaction or addition the Calgary Flames happen to make to bring in a more natural center. And we know that that's been something on Craig Conroy's sort of to-do list, and it's one of those easier said than done things. But until one player seizes the center spot, as you mentioned, Wilsey, whether it's Sharangovich or Pospisil, I think this is something that we're going to see players rotate in and out of. I don't think that this is anything that's going to be a set-and-forget sort of lineup down the middle when you look at Kadri, Backlund, Rooney, Kirkland, and then the potential of one of Pospisil or Sharangovich. This is something I think that we're going to see sort of flipped around all season long unless there's somebody brought in externally that the Calgary Flames feel is a full-time center.
Yeah, they're definitely without that permanent number three center guy, and doesn't mean that's their third line center. But you've got Kadri, you've got Backlund, you've got one of Rooney or Kirkland, and then you're missing that natural fourth guy that is kind of in that middle six. And I didn't mind Sharangovich at times there, but again, to your point, Wilsey, I think they want a little bit more offense from him and see if he can be a little bit more impactful and dynamic offensively, which I think we all agree he probably has a better chance of doing on the wing. Pospisil, yeah, there's been really good mark points. There's been really not so good points with him playing down the middle, and they have said multiple times when they've gone away from it that the experiment is not over, and they still are somewhat committed to doing that, whether it's giving Zary an opportunity down the middle or whether it's going to find somebody. I do think that for the next little while, this is probably going to be something that is a bit of a rotating door, is a bit of a work in progress, because nobody to this point has stepped up and said that, yeah, this is my spot. Right now, you've got some guys who can play center, but maybe aren't best suited to play center, who have been there, and maybe that does amp the urgency up a little bit for Craig Conroy to go and make an acquisition, but I kind of hope not. I kind of hope that the right now isn't going to, you know, get him any closer to making a deal. I just hope that if he's going to make a deal for a young center, it's a deal that he would have made regardless of the way things are going with the team right now, just because I don't think you want to see right now stuff on the ice dictating too many types of trades or dictating too many types of additions. All that being said, yeah, I don't know if at any point in the first half of the season anyway, Wilsey, this isn't somewhat of a work in progress, because it feels like there's still a lot of learning they got to do about some of their guys here.
Yeah, and taking a look at the new line combinations today, guys, I'm actually pretty excited to see that threesome of Kadri between Zeri and Sharangovich. I think that that could be a line that creates some offense for the Flames. But I'm not going to lie, I'm a little bit worried about that line of Pospisil between Huberdeau and Kuzmenko. If I'm the Sabres and I see that line, I'm trying to get my first line on the ice as often as I can. Huberdeau has been better without the puck and better defensively this season. Kuzmenko isn't great in that area, and Pospisil looks a little bit lost right now. So I would be trying to target that road with, or that line with last change in tomorrow's game. You love the line of Backlund between Coleman and Coronado, and right now you've got four options for your third line, and kind of whoever they use there, I'm happy with that group. So we'll see how it all plays out. But I still like Sharangovich more up the middle than I like Pospisil. But Pospisil just hasn't been as impactful in either position. So I know they're trying to get him going. I know they'd like to get some more offense from Sharangovich, who only has two goals to start the season. So we'll see. A little bit of tinkering coming in off an overtime loss. And we'll see if it works against the Sabres to wrap up this road trip.
It is our Daily Flames Roundtable. Derek Wills, Aaron Vickers, Pat Steinberg on a Friday edition of Flames Talk. And speaking of the Sabres, boys, this was, again, supposed to be a year where the Sabres get back to the playoffs. This was supposed to be a year where finally Buffalo maybe takes a significant step from being a young and up-and-coming squad to maybe now realizing their potential. Now, I'm not saying that won't happen, but they are 6-7-1 to start the year, and currently on the outside looking in for a playoff spot in what looks like it's going to be a pretty heated Eastern Conference conversation this year. What's our feel on this very young and still somewhat exciting Sabres group? What's our feel on them after a 6-7-1 start?
Well, I'm a little bit torn on this team, Pat, because it's been a long time since the Sabres were relevant. And, you know, having grown up 40 minutes from Buffalo, I know how passionate the sports fans in this city are for the Sabres, for the Bills, for whoever. So I think they deserve to have a competitive team. They have one in the NFL and would love to have one in the NHL. And the Sabres do have a lot of exciting young players, but this is a team that has not made the playoffs in 13 seasons. The last time they played Stanley Cup playoff hockey was back in 2010, 2011. They haven't won a playoff series in 17 seasons. You've got to go all the way back to 2006, 2007. I mean, that is a long drought, and that is a long rebuild after rebuild after rebuild. But on the flip side of that, they have 10 first-round picks. They have 5 top 10 picks. They have 3 top 5 picks and 2 first overall picks on their roster. They're the youngest team in the league with an average age of 25.5 years old. And they've got their core group of players that aren't on entry-level contracts locked up long-term. Rasmus Dahlin, Owen Power, Tage Thompson, Dylan Cousins, Matias Samuelsson, and Ukko-Pekka Luukkonen all signed through at least 2028. So the window, I'm not even sure it's opened for that core group of players yet, but sooner or later, you got to get to the playoffs, and you probably have to win a playoff series. So they've got some time to do it because they've got all those guys signed long-term, but man, if I'm a Sabres fan, the wait has already been too long. I want to see some playoff hockey sometime soon, and when I say that, I mean this season.
Yeah.
This is one of those circumstances where you can point to a team that sort of went scorched earth and they're in phase two of what should have been a one go around sort of rebuild when they initially had selected Jack Eichel with the second overall pick back in 2015. But yeah, you run through the names and even just the defense, when you got Owen Power, you've got Rasmus Dahlin, you've got Bowen Byram. Like, those are three cornerstone defensemen to build around. You got Tage Thompson, who scored 40 goals. I'm really big fan of J.J. Paterka as well. And you just run through this roster, and you highlighted it, Wilsey, with the number of first overall picks, top 10 picks, first round picks. Like, there are a lot of players to get excited about if you're the Buffalo Sabres, and there are probably quite a few teams league-wide that would trade roster for roster with the Buffalo Sabres, but they still haven't found what it is they need to find in order to be not just a perennial playoff team, but to find the playoffs once. You mentioned it. It's been 14 years. It's been a long time. I hate to look back in the old memory banks and see who and what I was back when the Buffalo Sabres were a playoff team. So it's a cautionary tale for Flames fans, perhaps, that want to go scorched earth, trade any veteran that you can to get any return that you can, so you can get a higher draft pick or you can get more prospects. This is the danger of doing that, where you have to cycle through phases of a rebuild before you find success.
The thing that is maybe the most concerning, and you know, Wilsey, you'd probably be the best guy to talk about this because you grew up across the border from Buffalo. You're basically in your backyard, and this team is not drawing. Their last home game against Ottawa, which typically is, even if the Sabres aren't in a great spot, that's typically a big crowd because Sens fans travel too. That last announced crowd was just over 12,000. This is a team that is now starting to see the results of their poor on ice play in the stands. And when it comes to the bottom line, when it comes to attendance, and that's been the case for quite some time, and I don't think that's changing because Sabres fans are smart, Sabres fans are loyal, Sabres fans are passionate, but they're also frustrated and fed up and sick of it. And so now there's a situation where they're kind of like, yeah, we don't care about how much potential there is. We've been sold this bill of goods about potential and the future and how exciting we're going to be for, well, almost 13 years, which is just an insane amount of time in this era in the NHL to go without at least making the playoffs once. To not have one fluke season where you get in, they've gone 13 years in a row without making it. That is hard to wrap your head around in the cap era. And so if I'm a Sabres fan, I should be fed up because this hit would have been an extremely frustrating stretch. And so, I don't think if you're a Sabres fan, you really believe anything until your team has an X beside their name in the standings for the first time in however long it's going to be when they finally get there. I guess what I look at, Wilsey, I think you're absolutely correct. I mean, their cap structure going forward looks extremely promising. Them and the Senators both have this very promising young group of players locked up long-term on what all have potential of being very cap-friendly deals towards the back half of the contracts. Like they look like their cap structure is set, but it still needs to translate to playoff success. And the problem is that because they've been out of it for so long, your point about the window opening and closing and all that type of stuff, I wonder what the patience level is like for Sabres ownership, Sabres management, so on and so forth. It's one of the most fascinating markets in the world to me because when they're an exciting team, when they're a team worth cheering for, like Buffalo's an incredible hockey market. They care. It's one of the best U.S. markets going, but they've been so frustrated and disappointed for so long that I kind of get it if they're like, yeah, wake me up when the season's over, and if we're in the playoffs, then I'll pay attention again. Like, I could fully understand that.
Yeah, and as you said, this is the cautionary tale. Some rebuilds work, some don't. This one has not worked, and it feels like there's been about three rebuilds. And you get Jack Eichel, second overall, a guy who would have gone first overall in many NHL drafts, and he wants out. You know, you trade him and you get a pretty good return for him. But, you know, despite having this great group of young players, they haven't been able to figure it out. And for me, it kind of goes back to that 2015 NHL draft. And the Sabres tried to be really bad to get Connor McDavid, who was playing just up the highway in Erie for the Otters, and thought this guy is going to save our franchise. So they tanked and they failed because they didn't win the NHL draft lottery. Still got a really good player in Jack Eichel, but didn't get that generational guy in Connor McDavid. And for me, it wrecked their culture. Losing became okay. And, you know, a number of the players, most of the players who were on those teams after they drafted Eichel are gone. But I still think there's been a bit of a hangover from that. And, you know, you can't just flip the switch and say, okay, it used to be okay for us to lose, but now we want to win. I think it's tough. So I think that's one of the ways to explain why they've gone 13 years without making the playoffs. But they do have a lot of good young players. I do think they're headed in the right direction. I assume the culture is at least better than it used to be. But this is a great sports town. There's no doubt about it. And I think there are a number of factors why attendance is down. And I haven't been in the building in 4 years, so I'm looking forward to seeing it tomorrow. But the last time I was inside of KeyBank Center, it wasn't great. The downtown, they're doing a lot of work here, but it's not great. And then you've got a Bills team that has been a perennial Super Bowl contender for a number of years. So I think Sabres attendance numbers will go up when the Bills season comes to an end. But right now, you've got that to watch on TV, and you've got that as competition. So looking forward to seeing the Sabres tomorrow. They're an exciting young team, and we'll give the Flames, I'm sure, all they can handle. But this is a team that has tried to rebuild and has failed, and we'll see if this latest rebuild or retool or whatever you want to call it eventually works. But I feel like they're kind of running out of time here.
Just to put it into perspective, since they last made the playoffs, they've had 8 head coaches. Technically 7, oof, because Lindy Ruff has 2 runs in there. But prior to that, Lindy Ruff was the only head coach from 1997 to 2013. On top of that, they've had 4 GMs, including Darcy Regier, Tim Murray, Jason Botterill, and now Kevin Adams. Between playoff appearances, Regier was the GM from 1997 to 2013 as well. So you have 1 GM for 16 years. You've had 4 in that sort of span.
And I really do like a lot of what they've got. Yeah. I mean, their goaltending, I think,
who's their goaltender
is
again?
Trending very, very positively. Ukko-Pekka Luukkonen, the best name in all of hockey. I will not take any other submissions. There's only one best name in hockey, and he's the goaltender for the Sabres. But, I mean, they've got good goaltending. They, as Vix mentioned, they've got some incredible cornerstone pieces on the back. And they've got a nice young group of forwards as well that, you know, they should be a team that is able to get to the playoffs. But even right now, they're below 500 and sitting on the outside of a playoff spot. So we'll see if they can ever get back there, or if this very hard, long run that's hard to wrap your head around comes to an end this season or not.
And they've got more cap space than all but 3 teams in the league. Like, only the Flames, Ducks, and Blue Jackets have more cap space than the Sabres have. And I think what Kevin Adams would love was for the team to put him in a spot where he felt like he should use that cap space to add to their group before the deadline. They've got a lot of good young players, but I think the addition of 1 or 2 veterans who are proven and who have maybe made a long run in the Stanley Cup playoffs or even won a championship would be a great addition to this team moving forward. But again, you don't want to just throw that cap space away if your team doesn't deserve to bring those guys in between now and the deadline. So they're going to be a fascinating team to watch. And I feel like there are a bunch of teams like the Sabres in the Eastern Conference. You've got the Red Wings, you've got the Senators. They're all kind of fighting for the same spot, trying to get in probably as a wild card. So it'll be fun to watch that race this season.
Okay, Willsie, we will talk to you on Monday on our next edition of the Roundtable. Have a great weekend. Thank you, pal.
Have a great weekend, everybody.
He's Derek Wills. He's Aaron Vickers. My name is Pat Steinberg. That'll start to wrap us up on this hour of Flames Talk. But first, that's your daily Flames Roundtable brought to you by Mercedes-Benz Country Hills. The simpler way to sell your vehicle is with their expertise. Visit Mercedes-Benz Country Hills just minutes from the airport. Aaron Vickers is on Twitter at AA Vickers. Our producers this hour have been Cam Hughes and Shan Vergie. And this hour, as always, is the Sports Drive. Thanks so much to our friends at Calgary Lock and Safe. Treat yourself with up to $500 in savings of fire-resistant gun safes. Explore the full line of safes at CalgaryLockAndSafe.com.